Gene Moore is an independent producer at WRTI Temple Public Radio in Pennsylvania. She will be speaking with a member of the Shoshone Nation about the history of his people in Nevada, and she will also get his reaction to court challenges to treaties broken by the United States government. Here's Dr. Moore and her guest to tell it just like it is.
Don't be ashamed, let your conscience be your guide. But I know deep down inside of me.
I'm Jean Moore, coming to you on location from Costa Rica at the meeting of the International Board of Advisors of Radio for Peace International. My guest, a member of that International Board of Advisors, Mala Spotted Eagle Pope of the Western Shoshone Nation. Welcome.
Thank you.
Delighted to have you on the program to talk a bit about you, your family, and some of the many things in which you've been involved and still are involved over the years. Where are the Western Shoshone peoples located?
The Western Shoshone are mainly located in Nevada, but the Shoshone people as a whole covered about five different states.
Five states? How did that come about?
Well, the Western Shoshone is quite a large tribe, and the Shoshone people, when the white people settlers first came through, the Shoshones were in Oregon, Idaho, California, Utah, Nevada, and there are some branches of the Shoshones that actually went into Arizona and New Mexico, too.
So did they move voluntarily, or were they there and then in any way uprooted by the white people as they came?
Well, what happened was that the main Shoshone stronghold was in Oregon, even though that we were through all the rest. And what happened was is that when the first people that came were the Spaniards, and they sent two divisions at two different times up there, and both were beaten, and then the French tried, and they were beaten, and the European Americans tried, and they were beaten. But what happened was that the Shoshone were, at that time, they figured numbered about 500,000. They were one of the largest tribes in the United States. But when the European Americans came through, that they brought a lot of diseases with them that we had no immunity to. And the diseases swept through our people, and over two-thirds of the people were killed off by the diseases. After the diseases, then there were some smaller tribes that we didn't get along with, because we would raid these tribes because they would practice slavery, the Northwest tribes, and we were against it. So we would raid them and take away their slaves and free them. Well, they rose up against us, and we got pushed out of Oregon into Nevada. The white people never beat my people. Now, what happened is when they finally wanted to come into Nevada, that at that time, they wanted to just cross Nevada to get to California. They realized that they didn't have the resources to beat us, even though we were weakened at that time, because they were fighting amongst their own people, something called a civil war. And they didn't have enough resources to also engage us. So they asked for a treaty of peace and friendship, which we did sign. And it was to guarantee that we would still continue to have that land, and that they could cross our land and we would not hurt them, and that they could also build railroads and stuff across and support facilities along those railroads.
How did that treaty turn out?
Well, like every treaty that had been signed, the white people, even though this one was ratified by Congress, that they chose not to recognize it. That's actually been going through the legal courts for over 20-some years now. Because what happened is about 20 years ago, the white people realized that they made a mistake, because they never could give title to the land in Nevada, because the Indians still held title. So what they did is that the Bureau of Indian Affairs decided to give us $20 million for over several million acres of land. And they figured that they would pay us the price of what an acre cost back then in the 1800s. And so we would not accept it, because we don't believe in selling to Mother Earth, and also we knew that that would sell out whatever rights that we had. So we refused to accept the money, and to this day we have not accepted it. This battle went through all the legal courts from the lower courts on up to the United States Supreme Court. All the lower courts ruled in the favor of the Western Shoshone that we have never extinguished our rights. And when it finally got to the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the United States government, but said one thing. It said, oh, even though that this is true, that you guys have never lost title to your land, we could not allow you to have it back because it would set a precedent for all other tribes. So we have to take your land away from you.
What has that meant to your people?
Well, what we're doing is we still say, well, even though the Supreme Court ruled that, Supreme Court is still under the jurisdiction of another foreign government. We still do not say that the United States government is our government because we are people under an occupational government. And so what we feel that is we're still holding on to our land. We're still fighting for it. And we hope through the Creator, through prayers, and through some kind of ways that we will someday have a place to call truly our own homeland again, where we will not have to worry about being molested by others who want to come in and exploit us or take away what we do have left.
What has happened in the area of Nevada where your people have lived?
Well, on our tribal lands, that's where they choose to do the nuclear testing. And they have exploded over 1,000 nuclear bombs on our tribal land. And what they don't, most of the people, the citizens of this government or this country don't recognize is that the U.S. government is still setting off nuclear bombs. They've set off usually about 5 to 7 every year in the desert of Nevada. And these are what they call subcritical nuclear bombs. They're low-yield nuclear bombs which just stop short of going to critical fusion. And so they feel that they still are upholding the test ban treaty, even though that these are plutonium-based bombs. And that they have had problems with some leakage and other problems with these bombs. And they are still continuing to still to this day to test these bombs. We have been as a people protesting this because they took this land away from us illegally and are using it for purposes that as indigenous people we would never agree with. So we've been every couple times a year we hold huge gatherings there where we bring people from all over the world to try to show them what we really feel about it and try to bring more publicity to what they're doing.
You also take steps outside of that area, do you not? Do you go and bring your case to other levels?
Yes, we travel around. Our spiritual leader of our tribe is named Corbin Harney, and I assist him, and we travel around, and we've gone to different world governments, to the United Nations. We've talked at the World European Headquarters in Brussels. We have gone to the Finnish Parliament, Austrian Parliament, and the Holland Parliament. We've talked to many indigenous groups and many activist groups all over the world, trying to help them to understand what is going on over here on our tribal land and to gain their support. And we have gotten a lot of support from them. We have seen letters that they have written to the president from the parliaments and from the World European Headquarters that have been in support of what our people are asking for them to stop this nuclear testing and to recognize our treaties.
What do you expect may be the outcomes of all of this?
We're hoping that eventually, if enough world pressure comes, that eventually that the U.S. government will stop the nuclear testing because we see that this is something very serious that's hurting all of the life on the Mother Earth. And then also we're hoping that someday that we understand that they will probably never give us all our land back, but that if we could have a base of land to live our ways that we want to live under our own tribal governments, that, you know, we would like to do that.
Your history of your own family, your father, would you talk a bit about him?
Well, my father was also an activist, and he was a spiritual leader, and his name was Rolling Thunder. He was very controversial because he was very outspoken. He was very proud of being a native and proud of telling people about it way back in the 40s and 50s when it was extremely unpopular to say that you were a Native American. Most Native Americans at that time were trying to hide the fact that they were Natives because they had been shipped off to boarding schools and taught to to be ashamed of who they were and had their cultural identity stripped from them. And my dad had never gone to boarding school. His parents hid him out in the hills so that he wouldn't have to go until he was too old to go. And he was brought up by different elders and taught certain ways. And so he became actually also the legal spokesman for the Western Shoshone Nation for a while, because he taught himself how to read constantly and learned all the legal books of what he had to learn to be able to take him on in court. And he also helped form a community at one time in Nevada called Metatonte, which my family, we bought the land ourselves, made it into a nonprofit, and it was a place, an intertribal, interracial place, where people could come and learn about the spiritual way of life. That was going on from 1975 to 1985. And then when my mother passed away and the grief of my father was so great, we decided at that time we needed to close it. So my father was pretty well-known activist, and like I said, he was controversial because he was not afraid to speak out and say what he believed in.
It sounds as though he set the pace for you in terms of what you're doing and the activities in which you're involved.
Well, he did. He helped to set the pace because I admired the work that he did, and I traveled with him a lot. But there were also many other spiritual leaders that worked with him, and through that I got to watch many of them and the ways that they would work, and I traveled with a number of different ones.
My guest, Mala Spotted Eagle Pope. Mala, what are some of the activities in which you are very much involved at the present time?
Well, of course, like mentioned earlier, I'm on the board of advisors for Radio for Peace International, which I believe in because they're trying to broadcast messages both of an indigenous nature and also messages of peace from many different other cultures, trying to get information out to others who would not have it normally. So I try to help and assist them in it. Also, too, that I'm very much involved in, we're trying to build a new camp. I was directed to do this by my elders, who I work with, because they feel the time has come again for us to rebuild a new camp and to do it in a better way where it's not based on just one family, but that many elders and many others will be there to assist in this. And we're going to try to do it in the best way we can. Nobody will be charged money to come there. It'll be about teaching the spiritual way of life. We're not trying to create Indians, because only the Creator can do that. But what we believe is that all people at one time had the same teacher, and that teacher was the Mother Earth. We all had some kind of spiritual background if we look in back into our ancestors. And so we feel that we do not own the spiritual way of life, that it was given to all people from the Creator. There are those who have chosen to walk away from that way of life. Now there are those who are choosing to try to find it again, and they're looking to indigenous people for that. So we feel that there needs to be a place where they can come and they will not be charged any money, and they can learn about the basic way of life by just actually living it on a day-to-day basis. There won't be workshops. You will come there and you'll have to work, and you'll have to be a part of it, but you have to come with respect and an open heart and an open mind. And as long as that we all feel good about each other, you'll be welcome to be there. And you'll be learning from the indigenous people, the traditional natives that are there, especially the elders. We feel that what's going on is there's a lot of abuses that are going on out in the world with people misusing the traditional knowledge of the indigenous people. They're selling the ceremonies, they're selling the spirituality, they're making claims that they have no right to make claims to, and they're using it for their own ego, power, and gain. This is not our traditional path. This is not our spiritual culture or our ways. We did not do this as a people. So we had to create a place where that we can combat these kind of things, these abuses that are going on, and teach the people that are interested in the right way. There's also other things that I'm involved in too. We helped create a telecommunications company that is called Belonging to Mother Earth Communications that sells long distance. It sells phone cards and 800 numbers. And we created this so that we could be able to find a way to support Nana Shante and Radio for Peace International. So we take 7% of the total bill and donate it directly back to these two nonprofits. And We've done this in the best way we can. We're trying to use indigenous values when the way we set it up, so it's not being used for greed or for other purposes. And then there's other things also that I'm involved in. And my tribal people have put together a healing center called Pu'aba, which in my language means doctor waters. And it uses hot springs in a place called Tacopa, California, a tiny little town where our medicine people are working together and trying to bring in other healers of other ways to work together for the healing of the people, and no money will be charged for that. But that people can come there and get healed, and other healers can come and learn from each other and share that knowledge. And then also I work with a group called Shundahai, who is the anti-nuclear group, and it's a mixture of indigenous and non-indigenous activists who are actively fighting against the nuclear testing and against all this nuclear waste that's being dumped on indigenous land, and basically what's going on with the nuclear programs, because we feel there is no safe way to deal with this, and until there is, that there shouldn't be any of this done. And the indigenous people spiritually believe that the uranium was never meant to come out of the ground and be processed and made into the quantity that it has been made into, and it needs to be put back into the Mother Earth.
Mother Earth is very important to you. What is it about the Earth that gives you that sense of totality of the universe?
Well, we understand that we come from the Mother Earth and we will go back to the Mother Earth. Modern society does everything it can to separate itself from the Mother Earth. But we recognize that we are a part of it, and no matter what, how much you separate yourself from the Mother Earth, you will go back to her. And that we recognize that all the resources that come on this land are from the Mother Earth. And we recognize that anything that we do to Mother Earth, that we not only do to ourselves, but we do to the future generations that are coming along too. And if we don't take care of the Mother Earth, then the Mother Earth can't take care of us. We see the Mother Earth as a living being, that she is our mother, that she takes care of us in many different ways, that she does hear our prayers, does understand what we feel in our hearts and what we say. So that's why as indigenous people, we try to go out and pray every morning at sunrise for all the life upon the Mother Earth, to welcome in the new life and to make sure that we're there so that the Mother Earth knows that we care, and all the life that's out there may know that we still care about them and are trying to honor them. We recognize that there's a very powerful connection there for us. And the Mother Earth never walked away from us. We walked away from her. And she is still there waiting to hear our prayers, to hear our dances and songs, to understand that we are what we were supposed to be, caretakers of this Mother Earth.
Every morning at sunrise here at the International Board of Advisors Conference, you have raised those beautiful tones and songs. And I wonder, would you be willing to just give us some of that at this moment on this program? Because I know it's not the same, it's not sunrise, but could you share that with us?
Well, yeah, I guess I could try to. What we do every morning is that we sing a couple songs. There are many different ways for sunrise ceremony. It doesn't mean any are better or less than others. It's just different ways that different tribal people have or different cultures have to approach it, this sacred time. And what I was taught, one of the ways that I was taught about sunrise ceremony, because there are different ways that I have been taught to do it, is that when I travel out, I try to keep it very simple, and we sing two songs, and we make our prayers and give our offerings either to the Mother Earth or to a fire. And my own traditional people, the Shoshones, when we do it, we have seven songs we sing, and it can take 3 to 4 hours to do that, and we dance most of those songs. And we usually start early at daybreak, and sometimes in the dark. But I guess you've asked for just a little sample of a couple of the songs that we sing, so I will give you that. And usually I do have a drum or rattle that I use, but I will do my best to do it in this manner. Song, and usually that is one verse of it, and usually we always sing it four verses, and whenever we're out of sunrise, as most native songs are sung four times, and that's sung to welcome in all the things that come with each day, to welcome in the good spirits, to welcome in all forms of life. The next song is called an Eagle Spirit Calling Song, and it asks the spirit of the eagle to carry our prayers to the four directions, to the Mother Earth, to the Creator. Toyon, Toyon, Weya, Toyon, Toyon, Weya, Toyon, Toyon, Weya, Bella. Like I said earlier, that one would be sung four times also.
They're so beautiful. I've been so privileged to hear them, and probably before I leave, we'll be a part of one of those ceremonies with you.
All right, thank you.
I'd like for you to go back just a bit before we end to talk more about the healing center, the notion of healing, and also about the baths, the minerals.
Our people always believed that hot springs had a lot of power. In fact, amongst my people, there's, I guess you'd call it a legend, but there's a saying that there was a time when there were no sweat lodges, and that the people, when they needed to be purified, they would go to these hot springs because the hot springs would cleanse them. And they said that as the people traveled more and settled in more places where there were not these hot springs available, that what happened was that is what came to them through the Creator. The Mother Earth told them to build these sweat lodges, which would serve as the same purpose for these hot springs. But our people have always felt too, though, that when you can use a hot spring in this way, that it's always the best way to do that, because it comes directly all from the Mother Earth. It's all natural right there. And we feel that the water, the muds, and the hot springs all have a lot of power, and we had to approach them with a sacredness. We don't just go and hop into them. That they have a lot of power to help heal us, to help take out the sicknesses on many different levels that are within us. So we have found this place, like I said, in Tocopa, California. It's a tiny little town on the edge of Nevada. And what we did is that we found some old buildings that actually was an old healing center and had some hot springs right there. And we got this land and we actually bought it back and are in the process right now of rebuilding these buildings and making it habitable for other people to be there. And we've taken and trying to get these hot springs where we can use them again in a good way. And we've gotten a lot of work done. We're getting pretty close. But what we want to do is just have a place where our own indigenous healers can work together with other healers. They can learn from each other, work together, and not have the ego or the money or other things involved. The people can come there, and there will be no cost to the healing, no matter who's doing the healing. That the healers will be able to do what they were meant to do, to use that gift to give back to the people, and in return the people will take care of them for the time that they were there and try to help them out, you know, in their needs. And so in this process, that the healers themselves will be able to learn many good other ways to heal.
As you talk about healing, early on there was a lot of discussion among the medical people, Western medicine, as to the contributions or lack of contributions of what would have been the ancient medicines. What have you seen and observed about how this may have changed? Is there some recognition now of the power of the healing, both by the spiritual, but and also by some of the herbs and things that your people used for many, many thousands of years?
Well, sometimes we have to sit and laugh because many of the things that we've been trying to tell them for a long time, they're discovering now, but they also claim it's their discovery, you know. But it's there's getting to be more and more acceptance, because one of the things that we always told them, like I said earlier, that the Mother Earth is alive. Well, we recognize that all plants, rocks, everything have a spirit to them, and that they are alive, and that if you utilize them in the right way, they will help. Well, more and more that they've been finding more plants, more things to help them, but they've also found, I've seen articles where they say, well, if you talk to a plant, even a house plant, that it will respond to you. You know, it will grow better. And if you talk to it in a gentle way, you know, put good music around it, it grows strong. And if you talk to it in a harsh way, that it grows. And we've been trying to tell people that for a long time, that all these things can hear you. All these things have a life, and they respond just like a child would, just like anyone would. And so they're learning that, because what we want them to understand is there's more to medicine than just going out on a physical level, taking some kind of herb or taking some kind of medicine that they've concocted out of plants or other things and giving it to somebody. There's much more to the healing process than that. You have to look into it on a spiritual level. And the person who's getting the healing has to understand that whatever has come to them is something that they brought to them in their life, and that they need to understand that there's lessons in there for them, and there's lessons for those who surround them, whose lives that they touch.
You got me going in circles.
The travels for this interview took Dr. Moore to many places and put her in many circles. We've come full circle on the passion and love that Native Americans have for Mother Earth. Today's program was very informative and very, very interesting.
I am Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.